KPOO, Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Tin can phone, Mike and Armand Joe Queez, we the ones that you can depend on to bring the voices from the inside out. Locked down, but they not locked out. No filter over here. Check what we be talking about. Feet up in the trenches, bop. Wire on defenses, metal detector before you enter. Shaky medical and see your stitches. They be pushing their weight around. Educate, didn't have the time to wait around. Taking classes while they played around. That's what we call staying down. What we call staying down. That's what we call staying down. Mike, Armand, Joe Queez. Dang, is this 10 can phone?
Where'd the intro go?
Where did it go?
Fuck.
Why do I have a hand?
You raising your hand?
I don't know.
What happened? Your computer sound? Dang.
Ooh, that must booming too.
It was good.
Should we keep going? I mean, Queez, introduce us.
All right, that's it. That's what we got. We can always make
dang
some
this motherfucker, man. What's happening? 10 can phone. Misfit Adi. Yeah. You feel me? Slick Rick, you know what I'm saying? The city slicker, yes, him. I am him. You know what I'm saying? Armand, pretty boy Pustos, punch out Pustos, huh? Straight from the villain himself. What's happening?
Oh, Queez, Michael. You know it's Armand, aka Quentin Quarantino. I'm COVID positive, sucker negative. Michael, the artist, how you doing, buddy?
Oh man, I think the intro is poetic reality as we pre-show just living the life, and then pre-show is like life, but on show, yeah, my life has been interesting. February, both just in my own work and in the city and in the nation, so keeping it strange.
What is the date today? I'm so disconnected.
Yeah, good job. Leah, let's see. The date will get our... It's the 20th, February 20th. We're still in Black History Month, as I've been coining Afrofuturist February, baby. We are going to the future. We are still striving. We are surviving.
Peace, man. Jack History, man. It's Jack History Month for the Yay area.
Yay!
Love it. Oh, man. I was also going to say that I wanted to say before, I was leaving it as a surprise. I now have a standing desk.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just standing. Yeah.
Why is that?
So, yeah, I've been doing this Afrofuturist February programming at Dr. Martin Luther Jr. School, Northeast Portland. And I talked to them about archiving and thinking about the future. And then I brought in Lisa Jarrett, and we were talking about identity, kind of like who are we as people, as Black people in the world, crafting our identities. But the third one, I brought in Lex Weaver, who was like a yoga, mindfulness, breathing kind of like health life coach person. And I was like, I set this goal for myself because I feel like, and I have no idea, interestingly, what the perception of listeners who met me through this show is even of me. I was talking to Juwan yesterday and he was like, oh, I didn't know any of the things you were doing. But yeah, I'm an artist, but I also do a lot of administrative work sitting on a computer. So I was like, come on, let me save my life. Let me get out of this chair. Let's do it.
Yes.
So here I am standing.
I salute it.
I learned art just from being close to you is there's a lot of paperwork involved with this.
Oh man.
There's so much paperwork.
Papes, I can make it rain. It ain't worth a dime.
See, how you been though? Tell us something. I've been seeing you on the social media out there, cupcaked up, looking beautiful, you and your gal, doing walks, crafts. It's looking nice, though, honestly. It's a lot of love. I love it.
Yeah, we call it cupcake, and I call it new life. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, that's what I once called it when I didn't understand it. You know, fear what you don't know, laugh at what you don't understand. That's how people get by in life, bruh.
Before you go there, why don't you break down what's cupcaking? And I feel like I'm like chasing the pan over here.
Yeah, nah. Cupcaking is what we used to say about the square ones.
You
laid up. You laid up like 2 points. You feel me? You on the phone all the time, telling her what you're doing, where you at. You know what I'm saying? Just all the sweet shit.
Page.
You over there cupcaking, boy. You baking cakes with her. Get up there.
I see.
You feel me?
And so you're new life in it.
And ultimately, I just like you gotta understand. I did a decade in prison, so I slept next to men. I've been around men for 10 years straight, so I need something soft next to me. You feel me? Why would I want to be with anybody else? I'm rocking with Baby. You feel me? But also, like I said before, if you see me on social media, like my post, like, you know, this is also school for me, because she helping me, you feel me, with my trauma. She helping me with dealing with my past and you know, identifying, really, because the work come within, but like she just helping me identify and stop, you know, engaging in the same cycles or quit choosing the same cycles. You know, sometimes when we get into it, just be like, you know, you got a choice now. You could choose to let it go and it was a misunderstanding, or you could choose for it to keep going and you feel the way that, you know, in an angry manner or in a hurt manner, or, you know, and it's like, when it's broken down like that, it's like, damn, I literally could choose right now, because she not mad, I'm not mad, but because we both were mad, some of us allow our cycle. We finna go through it. Hurt people, so now we finna say hurtful shit. We finna argue, you feel me? So I'm learning how to live, you feel me? You gotta live your way into a new way of thinking. You can't think your way into a new way of living, you know what I'm saying? Because sometimes thoughts are just that, they're thoughts. Until you start putting actions behind it, it doesn't become a plan. You feel me? You write it down, you had a thought, and then you write it down, but it becomes a plan once you actually start putting in the footwork. So with Baby, I'm just putting in the footwork to be better, because when we was in the trenches and when we was stuck and when we was not blind to, but uneducated on the situation, we had a reason to keep living like that. But now that I've been educated and I've been aware and I've been able to identify with it, I'm wrong if I choose to keep living like that. I can't, you know, when we was younger, we asked for a better way. We asked for all these blessings. We asked for all this shit. And then when we get blessed with it, we don't pay attention to our tuitions. We don't get, because we think God gonna send us our blessings in the way that we ask for them. And he don't. He send them in different ways that's gonna be best for us, right? So I gotta quit blocking my own blessings. I gotta step outside of my own way. And it just looks like cupcaking, but I'm really learning, because I never was like this before, to where now I'm like, okay, it's okay to express this. Like, I'm gonna let her know when I'm mad. I'm gonna change up when I'm mad. So if I'm just sitting here and I'm thinking about them, like I'm thinking about Baby, I'm gonna send her a text and let her know. Sure. When usually I wouldn't, you feel me? It's communicating. Like, you gotta let her know. I can't only let her know when I'm mad or she do something wrong. Like, I gotta continue to praise her and continue to be blessed with her, you feel me? And just where she at and where she taking me with this shit mentally. So, like, it's all good. Like, I'm feeling it. These cupcakes got sprinkles and all type of shit.
Hey!
It's interesting, because that reminds me, because you were talking about, you know, stepping out of your own way. We were speaking recently, and I had brought up the analogy, which is interesting again, is like, you described essentially, you know, this snakeskin analogy. And that seems like a little bit of what you're talking about now, but we kind of were talking about what's going on in your life now. Is there a way to crystallize that for someone who doesn't know?
Yeah, so, and I truly live by that analogy about the snakes. We are reptiles. So when we are younger, coming up in these inner cities, these trenches, our parents didn't know, like, they didn't know what was to come for us. So they taught us the things that we needed to survive in those times. They taught us the things that we need, the best that they could, because, you know, my mom never finished school. My granny dropped out, like, in the third grade and was having to work back then, you feel me? Like, I'm not too far away from my cotton-picking bloodline. Like, I'm not too far away from them. Like, I think my granny, you know, I asked her before, like, what you used to do for your work? And she told me she used to pick cotton, you feel me? Like,
right.
So I'm not too far away from that. But so they taught us the best they could with the knowledge that they had to survive in those times.
Right.
But as we grow, we can't grow until we shed. So we have to, some people, we let go of like the things that matter in life because we are taught that they don't matter. We are brainwashed that they don't matter. So we shed that part in thinking that we growing, holding on to the traumas, gift that was passed down from fear. You feel me? Like, the shit we was blessed with, if you go to school, you and your brother, if your brother fight, you fight. You feel me? Like, all these things was out of fear of not surviving. So this is what our parents was teaching us. It was, like, never about, like, go get A's and B's in school. It was more like, you make sure you and your brother stay together on your way home from school.
Right.
You feel me? Like, you make sure if something happened to your brother, you go too. It's on. You feel me? So, right. Like, these are the things that we was taught, but also, like, we was taught to survive in those times. So as we grow, we got to shed that.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, unlearning. We can never shed that until we unlearn, until we identify. And a lot of us, it's bigger than identify, because a lot of us know it about ourselves, but we still just be like, fuck it, I could get away with it because I'm a nigga, or I could get away with it because I'm a real one. I could get away. Like, you can't foul this shit. These is different fouling cabinets. You know what I'm saying? So I just realized what I'm failing in my filing cabinets, and it's just like ignorance. You feel me? We choose to be ignorant because they said that black is ignorant. So when they say black is ignorant, we like, fuck it. That's an excuse. We gonna do all this crazy shit. And then just fuck it. It was because we black. We niggas. Fuck it. We real ones. That's what they expect of us anyway. So we had to change that narrative. You feel me? Because it don't matter until we start to care. Sure. And once you start to care, go ahead, Mike.
I was just gonna say, with that being the case, where are you at with what we were talking about the other day?
I got a job.
You got a job.
The same job. Look, I called my old boss. This is where I was at with it. I called my old boss in the job like, I need to come back. Mm-hmm. But that same day, he called me back and my girl told me, don't answer. Just be patient, bro. Like, be patient. Something gonna come. I swear to God, the very next day, the job I was waiting for called me.
The new job?
Yes, sir.
Look at this guy.
I just did the background check and everything. They like 3 to 10 days, and come on, they gave me my time. Like, it's a go. A couple days ago too. I'm tripping.
Congratulations. For pre-context for the listener, Queez was gonna give up hope.
Facts.
You were. That's what it sounded like. You're like, yeah.
You gotta understand. I think me and you had a conversation. I know me and Armand did with our interview. When I say if you keep that, I'm gonna go back to what I know best. That's a failure mindset. Because we know what the end of that is, and that's what I mean by the cycle and making those decisions. But I was just in a place where I was like, you know, again, the way I was raised, like, you gotta eat, bro. Like, you got a family, you pay bills. Like, this is what you have to do. My pops was in theory. You feel me? Like, I was in foster homes and group homes from 5 years old to 8 years old, and my pops died when I was 11. So, like, all I knew was helping my mom. All I knew was grinding, and you feel me? And so I went back to that guy. But I also, like I said, me calling you and us popping it was more like a me needing somebody to tell me, like, come on, bro. Like, to talk that sense into you, feel me? And that's what a true friend gonna do. Like, anyone, like, other homies is gonna be like, all right, bro, I got the pack. We could go do this or we could go do that. You feel me? Like, I can help you, right? And I love a motherfucker who's willing to help me, but at the same time, if you see where I'm at in life and you see where I'm trying to go, like, you shouldn't be so quick to just throw the pack in my hand. You feel me? So I'm just, and again, it's lessons in the stress, and that's what I always say. You feel me? Like, it's lessons in that stress, and if you just sit back and pay attention to it. So, like, you know, I just thank you for being able to be one of those people that I can call when I'm feeling at my lowest, because I was feeling at my lowest, and I was feeling, you know, depression. I was feeling, like, you feel me, a lot of different things, and you know, you just being one of the people that I could tap in with. I salute you for that, though, Mike, for real.
I mean, you're doing the work. And, what Mon and I were talking about earlier was just, about investing time and energy in a way. It's like it's very anti-capitalist inherently, because relationships are not capitalist entities, while they can be most, you know. But also, as like, the odds are not in anyone's favor, but I mean, at least for me, that's kind of what calls my investments. But pinging Snakeskin, I was gonna be like, Mon, you got some, what, you got gators on? You got, like, now you gotta do an audio description for our visually impaired listeners here. What is going on in your little Zoom bubble?
I'm just fresh to death, but I'm living, you know what I mean? With a brand new jacket. I mean, I'm in quarantine right now at a county quarantine COVID hotel, and I had to dress up just a little bit because this is the most social interaction I've had in a couple
of
weeks.
You're in quarantine. Catch us up. I feel like listeners have heard your story, but you came in, you were wearing pink. Now this guy, he looks like a rapper. He's got two beds, room alone. He's in
fresh lineup. No, I've been at rehab for a month. Someone got quarantined, and again, this rehab is not Malibu Passageways. We're not getting acupuncture and massages, and it's kind of with the low end of this rehab thing. Old building. I had a mouse in my room for a couple weeks. I would wake up every day and go check on like what it ate that day of mine. smells like absolute shit, but it's good. It's where I need to be. Yeah. But anyway, 50 men on a floor, two to a room, and someone got COVID on the floor. Someone knew that they let up. And that spread like wildfire. More than 15 of us have gotten COVID. And since testing positive COVID, they shipped us out to these county COVID hotels where everyone, It's very exclusive, guys. You have to have COVID to get in.
Epic. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and they just lock us in here, bring us our food, and say, go for it. So I've been here for 2 weeks, getting better, and I'm still breathing. So
yeah, that sounds when you first, because it's funny, I've been getting, and we'll put this content somewhere, maybe on the paywall. We're getting a paywall, guys. But Armand has been sending me little telegrams from the ether, and when I hear them, it's like he has always the same Armand voice where he's like hyping it up and he's like, I got COVID, and you're like, damn shit, that sounds terrible. Oh god. But yeah, where being in a hotel alone with your phone is almost like a dream. In that jacket, you're like trapped in like a millennial dream where you just get to scroll. I don't think it's a dream, but it's almost, comfortable.
It's honestly, it's kind of like counterproductive to what I wanted, because I had hit such a low mentally with substances, legal stuff pending, just all these dark clouds on me. I wanted to get institutionalized again. So when I got stuck into the crappiest rehab that you could be, locked down, smelling like dudes' farts, die slapping cards, like, and biggest thing, a digital detox, this phone just thrown away, I was starting to like find myself again. Because sometimes I learn the hard way, and when I get disconnected like that, it allows me to kind of go back into myself and be like, dude, what do I want out of life? Do I want to keep going into facilities like this for my life? Because that's kind of what I'm manifesting through my actions. So it was kind of weird kind of being snapped back into the real world in a moment, even though it's an alternate universe of COVID. Yeah. But you know what? I've been doing good. I've been seeing guys in this hotel that are in rehab with me going out there, getting high, kind of falling off from their program and whatnot. And I've just been sticking to myself. And as you were saying, with the me and my telegrams of laughter and stuff, that's how I've dealt with all the bullshit in my life. I've always, you know, I've gone to too many funerals and we're cracking jokes there. And that's just what me and my family do.
Yeah.
Is we turn the crabbiest, darkest shit into laughter, because that's all you got. But, you know, I'm happy to be here right now, guys, for real.
I mean, it's great to hear you in a way. It's really interesting. As I say this, someone's listening and they're like, what does that mean? But just the way that you are speaking, like, content and like hum is focused, which is really interesting, because in a way, when you were in a certain other place, you were focused but in a scattered way that didn't also seem to be producing what you wanted. And it's interesting too, like you mentioned depression, like I feel like often when folks are depressed, they're withdrawn, but then there's a way of this, like, when I'm working with folks and they continue to like state dreams or something, and they're like, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that. It's kind of like, all right, dude, yeah. And then when there's this like cognitive dissonance between projecting that goal and like not even being close to that, it's like watching a dude be like, I'm gonna dunk on him, and then like can't dribble. And like so the reason I bring that up is I can hear it literally like in your harmonic resonance, but also in like in what you're saying, but also, yeah, to bring up that, you know, I'm kind of actually trying to send a guy your way right now, which like for me, when I first saw it, apparently there's like a bill to try to get prisons COVID vaxxed. I mean, it's like exciting and like maybe is happening just to try to, you know, like it's like, is this a benevolent gift or like just let them out or whatever, you know? But it's certainly like some investment in the team, so to speak. But
I can speak on that. Like, so I know this. So I've been, you know, while I was in rehab, all I had was my roommate had a, radio, so I've been listening to the radio on that, and they're trying to put the prisoners up on the list of like higher priority, And I think a lot of it comes down to you can't, I mean, 28% of the men in Oregon are on mandatory minimums. They can't legally be pardoned or get out like that. So, and the last thing that these prisons want to see is themselves get sued, because they're, I mean, I seen just in the facility I'm in, I'm far from a jail. I saw how this thing just went from one person to 15 of us in about a couple days.
Right.
Inside of like what's already happened in the jails, like, it's Contagionville, and they can't, it messes with the machine that's been built, you know? So I think it's a liability thing to get these guys the vaccine, and I don't know, there's a lot of politics and bureaucracy in that.
I mean, even just for listeners, again, whenever we're hearing this, I mean, between our last recordings, the president was acquitted of incitement of insurrection. So it's just, it's odd times for like systems and ley lines. But yeah, again, interesting, because like it being in the situation of trying to send a guy into treatment, like, because as a society, we still only have certain ways and certain places to deal with people who are struggling with specifically substance abuse. But, you know, as Squeeze brought it up, just like struggling in general emotionally. Like, I feel like when I'm talking to guys, I'm just like, you know, like, are you in therapy? Like, at least, you know, do you guys do therapy? Either of you?
Quiz?
You talking about you? You talking about me?
Oh, okay. Well, I mean,
everyone.
I mean, I've done therapy and whatnot. You know, I've tried to. I do a 12-step program. I get a lot of therapeutic work when that was working with other people that are also dealing with addiction. Mm-hmm. But man, it's hard. It's what a simple way of putting it. It's difficult to kind of dive into your soul, your psyche, and be like, why am I this way? What factors are these socials? Am I crazy? Is this all psychological? Where's the balance of this? You know, because like at some points I was trying, they're, you know, giving me different diagnosis of this and that. You might have general anxiety, you might have bipolar too. And I'm like looking at myself and I'm just like, I don't know if I'm crazy, or if it just all these pressures of like, of feeling like I've been denied certain things because of my past actions and trauma that I've been through. So it's a weird balancing act of trying to figure all that out.
Sure.
I don't have an answer yet, really.
To be honest, I had this thing where, and again, you know, shouts out to Baby. She helped me realize this because she's big on, you know, therapy and understanding Black trauma, because Black trauma is a little different, and Black PTSD and you know, urban, like, it's different. But like for me, in order for me to do that, I'm gonna have to speak ill on people that I love. And if anybody know me, like, I don't really, you know, I don't put family business in the streets. I don't put, you feel me? Once I put you, like, I never speak on you to anybody else and like put a business on the street. So I know, because I've now realized where a lot of my trauma come from, like a lot of my ways, you feel me? My girl helped me realize like my dislike for women, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Which led to certain actions and certain careers and certain things, why I am the way I am with women. And sometimes the connection with my sister, the connection with my mom, like, you know, I didn't have that connection because it was just chaos from the moment I was born. Just, you know, it was chaos. So, and my mom didn't breastfeed, so I didn't have that connection with her. We went through foster care young, 5 years old. So my sister, the only woman that didn't have that connection with her. So with therapy, I don't want to speak on the things my mom did wrong to cause us to go to foster care. I don't want to speak on, you feel me, my pops being absent. I don't want to speak on, like, it's just certain things, because I don't, for me, once I put that in the world, then somebody knows that about my family. Once I put that in the world, somebody knows that about my mama. Somebody knows that about my sister. Somebody, and I'm gonna always speak highly of everybody that I deal with, everybody I mess with. I'm gonna speak highly of you to anybody else. If you run into somebody and say, oh, I talked to Queez about you. Oh yeah, he spoke highly of you. That's what it's gonna always be, no matter what our situation is. So for me with therapy, I would have to go in there and truthfully admit some of the things that, you know, my family have done and the mistakes that I feel they made in my life. And once that's out there, you feel me, then that's out there, and that somebody knows that about my family. And I just eat with that, because, you know, I've always been told what happens in this house, stay in this house. I just don't want to put a bad light on nobody. I don't want to say, you feel me, like, drug use, you feel me, drug use. caused us to get taken away from our family. You feel me? So like, I just don't want to go out there and make it seem like, oh, my mom was a dope fiend and she wasn't there for us. And you feel me? Because it just, no matter how I say it, it's going to get portrayed in a bad way. You know what I'm saying? But that's, again, that's Black PTSD. Like, that's Black. That's like, you know, being young and being stripped away from your parents. That's the same thing as slavery. Like, they would let them have kids and then they would take the kids from them. And that's why mothers had to talk bad about their kids, like right in front of them. Mothers had to call their kids stupid. Mothers had to say that they're worthless. Mothers had to say that they're useless, like to the slave owners, because if they had anything good to say about the kids, then that was a great trait for them to be sold. You know what I'm saying? So the psyche of a mother having to talk so bad about her kid just so that he doesn't get taken away. So for me to turn around and now speak ill on my mom or speak ill on my brother or speak ill, like I just don't do that. So I trust people, her specifically, and I work through my issues with her. So, you know, them nature walks. I'm going to say you always see me on social media and nature walks. That's why I say nature walks to fight the demons. No more pills for better sleeping. You know what I'm saying? Because I used to, I used to depend on pills. I used to prescription pills to numb the pain. You feel me? Big lean, big lean, Texas tea to numb the pain. Like, I indulged in those things, but now it's like I'm facing it. For the first time in my life, like, I'm facing shit sober. You know, I smoke tree, but, like, sober, like, I'm facing everything, and I'm living in it. Like, I'm actually living in it and expressing and really feeling the emotions and not hiding it from, you feel me? Not like, hiding it from myself. That would, being sober is, like, making me really feel what all these emotions is that's helping me grow.
Mm-hmm. Amen. And that's, oh, can I just say one thing? Yeah. Like, and that's, like, anyone can post anything online, but when you know someone and what they're going through, and when you see the images going out and then you know what's happening behind the scenes, I mean, it honestly, it's like inspirational, dude, because it's, I'm getting to see a change in you, and you're possessing something that I want. And yeah, that, and that is this healthy way of kind of dealing with these issues. You're having a trusted other, a partner that you can consign in, and I see the growth in you, man. So, like, it's just, it's big.
It's blessing, because a lot of people don't have that support system. Like, a lot of people, but again, with me and Michael in our situation, sometimes we do have it, we just can't accept it, because we don't know how. I don't know how to, what's up with this dude, bro? Like, why are he acting like this, bro? I don't get this. And simple answer is like, oh, he care. You feel me? Like, and that's what she said, like, he care. That's why he acting like that. But I have been so shielded and so, like, I don't, nah, like, the relationship is going to always be deeper on your end than it is on my end, because I never allow you to get that close to me. And that's a horrible way to live. Like, you block your blessings. You got good people in your life, and you so scared of your past catching up to you that you just don't even let people in. So we always ask for these good friends. We always ask for honest and, you know, somebody that's going to tell me how it is, and somebody's going to let me know when I'm messing up. Like, these is all the qualities we ask for in a friend. And then when we get it, we block it out. We don't accept it. So yeah, now I'm learning, like, to accept. But this is the thing about unlearning. Let me not get it messed up. In order for you to unlearn, you have to admit that the things you have been taught was wrong. Nobody wants to say my big homie, my mama, my granny, nobody wants to say them people was wrong. And ultimately, nobody wants to say the way I've been living for the last 20 years has been wrong. You have to be able to admit that, all right, it was fucked up. Like, they taught me wrong. Yeah. But you know, in a society where everybody wants to know everything, in a society where everybody wants to, you know, like, nobody could be wrong these days. Like, nobody could be wrong these days. Like, nobody's admitting that they're wrong these days. So, you know, it's just, that's the thing about unlearning. That's the hard part, is admitting that, okay, my upbringing was wrong, or, you know, this is what's wrong with me, and start looking at it as a problem, because it's a problem. In our community, we are so shielded that we do not look at stuff as a problem. Yes, because when we get around, you feel me, our counterpartners, and we get around other people, and they, like, kind of figure out and hear your story, like, oh my God, you went through what? Yeah. And for me, it's like, yeah, like, everybody I know ain't never seen a daddy in the hood. Nobody had no goddamn, you feel me? And we, oh, that's normalizing trauma. We normalize our trauma. We have to quit normalizing our trauma and accept that there's something wrong with us, and that's
the last point reminds me of a time I was doing a lot of organizing in Baltimore before I came out west, and I remember I was at some symposium, and this speaker comes up and he goes, like, oh, we're at 300 something murders this week or whatever, and no one like reacts, and he's like, yeah, you know, whatever, just, and he's like, that's because we're traumatized, like, that's not okay to just be talking about it in that way. But you made a lot of really interesting points, and I do want to say, you were talking about, like, you know, not being able to see the friendship. And that's so, you know, right now we all have a peer, and I guess like as we, I'm the only one, I guess Armand is in Oregon, but is Quarantino. But yeah, there's a comrade who right now is kind of grappling with the situation, and I'm trying to like usher him in the direction of where Armand is at right now. Mm-hmm. And when we, it was like a challenging conversation in a lot of ways, because these patterns emerge where it's like, well, this happened and that happened. And it's like, well, this happened because of that and this happened because of that. And I'm like, well, I mean, I don't even need, I'm not trying to admonish what's happening. Like, it's just all good. And also it's not gonna be all good. And so we need to like come up with a plan, right? We need to like start shedding that skin. And, you know, when you were talking about like the pills to sleep kind of situation, I mean, that is interesting too, because just from what I know about our comrade, like there is trauma there, right? Like maybe one could even assume it, but I also just know.
So look, this 10 can phone.
More than I know,
This is 10 can phone with a real get spoken. This is a situation, and this is a real life situation for you, Mike. Like
yesterday.
So you have to think about this. You see where we are in this, what we stand for and what we, how we trying to educate our peers and help our peers grow. Imagine being in a situation where your close friend is selling your other close friends his poison.
Literally the situation, you know what I mean? And that was kind of said is like, at the end, he was like, you know, I don't even, it kind of was like a weird deal. And then at the end, it was just like, you know, how can I support? And it was kind of like, I've been planning, I'm trying to figure, you know, it's like the mood shift a little bit, kind of like, let's figure out this transition situation. And he said, you know, I've never had someone who cares. Like, I never had a friend, not someone who's trying to get up on me and get some of my bag or see what they can get off of me. I've never had this. And I mean, as you said, it's my life experience. I've never had anyone tell me that or whatever. So it's a profound experience embodiedly, but it's also like in the moment, it's like a movie and you're like, oh shit, that happens? What, don't, really? You know, it's kind of just like, oh, the secret is like you needed someone to just not fucking not care, you know? And so, I mean, yeah, onto what you were saying, but it's just interesting.
It's that different when you know the person though. Because usually when we have friends that's struggling with addiction, we only know them. We don't know the people they're getting it from. We don't know the people they're hanging with. So when you actually have a being that you could say, like, I know it's this person because I've seen it, like, it makes it harder because it's like, damn, bro, like, he supposed to be your partner too type shit. You feel me? And, yeah, that's a sticky situation. But just, again, to just show the depth and just how real, you know, what you signed up for, what you didn't even know you were signing up for when you signed up to just run an art class.
I mean, in ways, I had expectation. Like, I think as it all happens, there's not surprise. And at the same time, you know, I remember when Obama was whatever campaigning, and like the primary critique was like, there's no time for on-the-job training. And he's like, bro, I got this. You know, I'm just like, I'm showing up. I think there's ways that I struggle. And the other thing that I was going to say about therapy is like, and that's, I mean, that's, this whole situation is making me think of it, because he was also just has trauma, needs to kind of like erase the trauma. And though it is only through the facing of the trauma that, you know, and I think this was prior to record or maybe was on, but that like addiction, the solution to addiction is not sobriety. The solution to addiction is connection. And what Armand was saying, and like, you know, and I am witnessing it in this weird way without prior knowledge per se, or like devout experience, but I develop it. But also just like, you know, the, I don't know. It's, I mean, I guess like, and this is when I do this for folks who are learning my expressive style, my mind is going through, it's like flashing, like prison industrial complex, like colonial culture, like capitalism, you know, we ain't spending money on nothing good, you know, the prison pipeline, school to prison. And it's like, of course, am I surprised we ended up here? No. Am I surprised I'm in this situation? No. I'm teaching an art class in a prison. Let's hanging out with them who ain't gonna be able to fucking do this. That's what it is. Like, it never was anything, maybe not that. And, you know, I mean, it's just, I'm excited in this, like, Nexus moment, like, before, again, just reflecting on Armand, reflecting on Queez, like, the different changes they're talking about making in this, like, kind of more public archive. But, again, pre-show, Mon was talking about this comedian. Was it a comedian?
Yeah, Patrice O'Neill.
And it's just, like, interesting. We were talking about, like, this kind of come-up story, this come-up time, this come-up moment. And, you know, these challenging life experiences are, you know, hardened steel cuts good, you know what I mean? Like, this is the kind of character development that bootstraps are figuratively tied to, but, you know, it does mean something. And I think, again, this is where the premise for this project began, is that these stories were rich and brilliant inside, but people who have them don't even really consider their story as worthy of remembrance. And the last thing I wanted to ping was, you know, so that's what I was gonna say to you, Queez, it's just that, like, I think trauma reflection is important, and there's also a way to bring up stuff that happened without demonizing the character of the participant, because we all know that it's all some kind of stuff that in a way we don't have control over, and it's like reverberation of a past we also didn't have control over, and it is hard. And though this, like, conscious engagement in that struggle that is self-healing, is, like, societally healing, and also because it can be in a way safe, not that confiding in your partner is problematic, but I also think, and in my own experiences, have discovered that there's more work to do in oneself than any one other person can hold. And so,
no, that's important. That's important you say that, because that's how this started. Was like, she gave me a space, you know, when it came out, it was like, she was like, I know you aren't even capable of being a good partner right now. Like, you just been through so much, especially being conscious of, you know, coming home and going through everything I had to go through when I came home. So it was never rushed. Like, it was never rushed. It was never like, this has to happen. It was like, here, take this space. And the way she helped me was books. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is what I'm on right now, The Four Agreements.
Love it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so how she helped me was, she gave me books. It wasn't necessarily me and her talking. It was me, like, you know, she recognized, because she's going through her own healing and she's already was in that process. So The Art of Love, all these different self-help books and all these different books, Gardening While Black, all these different books. And, like, she gave me the tool to get the information that I needed, you know. And it's an old saying, if you don't want a nigga to learn, put it in a book. If you want to keep it away from the blacks, put it in a book. They don't read, right? So what I'm looking at is, like, that's crazy to me, that the way you allow me to learn about myself and begin to heal myself is through these books. That now, full circle, you feel me? Niggas didn't, and pardon me when I say that, but that's what we used to say. Ah, niggas don't read. Bro, we ain't, we on the block. We ain't, you feel me? So, like, now it's like, okay, I'm gonna post up. And I remember being at the Shoreline, and I'm on ankle monitor. You feel me? Halfway house. And I remember I'm right downtown Portland, bro. All the clubs, the strip club right here on the corner. It's four strip clubs on the corner, right where I'm at. And I just remember, like, hearing everybody out there, they up and down the street. It's, you feel me, females, dudes, they part big partying. And I just remember looking out my window just like, damn. And I thought I would have a sense of wanting to be there. And really, I was comfortable where I was at, like, because I was working on my book at that time. And, like, I think I remember talking to you about it, Michael, like, this shit feel crazy to me. Like, I literally, my first instinct was, I'm out here. Like, just off that noise alone, it sparked a feeling in me. So we have to be conscious and be careful. And I say all that to say, be conscious, be careful, you know, of what we thinking. Because it thought invoke feeling, which then invoke actions. You feel me? Something may not bother you until you, then you think about it. Are you here? I hear somebody say something, and think about it, and I automatically have an emotion about it. And after I had that emotion about it, it's only one thing left. I got to carry out the act. Now the action is coming behind it. So, you know, that's something I'm learning. Like, she didn't, I'm still conscious of the things that I open up about, because, you know, I just fear for people having too much information about me. Growing up, how we came up, the more somebody know about you, that's more ammo they got when they get mad at you. You know what I'm saying? Like, as soon as you get mad, all this shit is going to be on blast and on Front Street. But we pay attention. So we already been through stuff. We've been friends for 2 years before we ever even became partners. Mm-hmm. Like, partnership is kind of new. We've been friends for 2 or 3 years already. Mm-hmm. And so through the test of time, I've seen, like, okay, she different, bro. Like, she really, everything is about me. Everything is about bettering me. And mentally, though, you know what I'm saying? Like, I remember hanging with her, and she like, bro, if you want to hang with me, you got to put in like 5 applications a day. Like, you hanging with me, you got to put in 5 applications. I'm like, what the fuck, Craigslist? Like, hell no, like, what? But that's what the thing was. Like, if you really like hanging with me, you want to hang with me, put in these applications. Mm-hmm. Or you finna be right back at the shoreline. You can go hang out at the shoreline. You want to just hang out and play video games? You can do that at the shoreline. Mm-hmm. She going to work and shit. So, you feel me? Things like that, Mike. Like, it's never was like just her, me talking to her. She showed me through action. You feel me? Like, and then nature, you feel me? She introduced me to nature and really showed me what it's like when you, listen, it's different. When you stand there and you close your eyes, bro, and you can hear the wind blowing through the trees, you can hear the water, and you can hear the birds chirping, and it's all in one as unity. Come on, bro, that's peace, bro. Like, you, when you hear that, if you ever can really experience that, like, when I experienced that, like, all the capitalist eras of the world is erased when you go to nature. Like, there's no capitalist ran anything in nature. You just got to be one with. So, like, and so that helped me, too. Like, I'm talking about Jordans and all type of shit. I'm out there in Jordans and all type of shit, and it let me know that I put the worth on material things.
Sure, right, right. You know? And I just want to clarify, I don't mean that it's, like, not good, which I don't think you're hearing, but was going to say, like, I remember when Joe first got out, he was like, oh, man, it feels like it didn't even happen. And I was, like, literally coming back from camping, and one of my partners was in the car, and so she could hear, and she goes, oh, that's trauma. You know, like, it is this. And so when you were just talking about, and I think, again, from just my near proximity to the trauma, and as you said as well, like, cotton picking is not far back. That, yeah, just inviting, because I know from my own relationships in both directions that it's not something that all the work can be done, mm-hmm. but not because I think no work can be done there. But the reason I was bringing that up is I want to try to, with our collective powers, because, like, we all know Brother Irving, mayor, the next future mayor of Portland, is now on these streets, you know, hitting the stuff, doing the things. But I'm just like, man, can we get a safe enough exterior to prison group of guys together to, like, do this hard work that in a way seems like, as we almost disparately navigate it individually, to collaborate, to, like, hold a larger space together. So that's a dream I'm having, and was a segue to it. Not that I think any of the paths that we're on is somehow not the right one or something.
Yeah, well, can I speak on that real quick? It's just like, and I get that, in reflecting on my life and our lives and how we're doing it, is we're writing the narrative, and we have to. And when I'm active in my destruction, my chaos, what I realized is I don't know if we could get to that point of helping others if I cannot help myself. Right. Like, and so for me, it's like I'm trying to rewrite the narrative of my own life so that I can actually overcome this. Because in this country, say a lot about it, we love an underdog in this country. We love to see a rise from rags to some riches, whatever that means. Yep. And I don't walk that walk, and I'm just talking that talk. My words don't mean shit. You know what I mean? And, man, I just, a lot of things what Queez was saying, because I went the opposite way. Like, I came out and I had a really good friend that was waiting for me. She held it down for me when I was in my lowest points of my life. And because of my traumas, my relationships with females and such, I couldn't even embrace that. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't even embrace this person that just used this, you know. And now that I've cleared my mind and ruined so much more destruction, and she's just like, man, you had this, I was here the whole time, why are you now just coming to this after breaking my heart, breaking your heart, breaking some family's heart? And I'm just like, I was so blind to that, I didn't even know what I had, because I was in my own way with so many different things. So I don't know if that made sense, but I think it might have.
No, it does. And I applaud this kind of like reach enlightenment before teach enlightenment. And at the same time, similar to like the wisdom of Brother Ben, like every bit of his wisdom was almost like a inside kind of kernel that was like a diamond forged under high pressure. And like, here I am. And a lot of these instances, like this is a rare instance where you guys, my collaborators, are like peer age to me or younger. You know, yeah. Often I'm working with dudes who are like, you know, double my age or whatever, or like, you know, 1.5. And it's this interesting situation where even in their, as they're grappling, there's some crystallization of wisdom there. And there's also something from my own position that can be shared. And I think even in this circle, there's been a lot of wisdom from different places that have been kind of contributed to the collective. And so, yeah, I applaud this. You know, if we thought of it like an organism where we're all reaching out into the world individually and gaining our own individual knowledges and coming back and linking them together, because and as I see in this context specifically, like ain't no one looking out for, I mean, in ways, but a lot of the organizations are like people who were inside and have kind of been recruited to this cause due to it affecting them. And so, and has developed solidarity among people who have never experienced prison, but you know, it remains like the work that we're talking about doing is actually hard, and sometimes even kind of co-conspirators in the abolition movement can't do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, because going back to what Ben said, it's like, and in the interview that I did with him, it's like he had these successes in the institution at the penitentiary, and I was like, do you think that the prison helped you? Do you think it gave you this opportunity? And he said, no, I mean, I did this despite what this prison did. And I feel like that's what I've been doing, what we've been doing, is everything in spite of this force of the institutionalism coming at us. And that's one thing that like I've been trying to drop is like, man, I might not be able to change any political structure out there, but through things like this, that's really where I can help. Because I can get on my soapbox all day and yell at this politician doing this and that, and I know what time it is. They're politicians, that's their game. Their game is this popularity contest, the power, and I get that. I know it very well. So it's like, I can either be frustrated at that my whole life and just, what are these, a lot of these social justice folks just tweet things and this and that and kind of be lost in that sauce, or I can just try to really focus in on these small building blocks and pray to whatever higher power I have that it will manifest to something bigger. And that's what we can do. And I think, again, like, we're doing it at this moment. It's crazy.
I mean, it's beautiful to see.
I just wanted to, you know, acknowledge our mom, man. You brave though, because a lot of people hide their addiction. A lot of people hide what they're going through and having to go through rehab. Rehab is like looked down upon, like, you feel me? Coming from this culture and what we stand for. So like, I just applaud you, you feel me, for the time you have with us and just putting it all on blast. Like, that's what Tin Can Phone was. I remember the original name was gonna be Stripping the Blue. Stripping the Blues, you feel me? Stripping the Color. We was just gonna be raw. And but through Tin Can Phone, like, you know, just the authenticity and the rawness and just you putting your sickness, because, you know, addiction is a sickness and they need to start realizing that, and putting it on front street for the people, like, you're helping. The politician is like, you helping the little somebody that's in the neighborhood that's really going through it. The politician can't help them. The politician, no laws they change, no rules they change. That shit doesn't help the people, because the shit is in the streets. So you got to be in the streets with it. You know what I'm saying? In Tin Can Phone, we in the trenches. Look up. Everton Park, we always in the neighborhood. Like, it's in the trenches. So I just salute you, brother. I salute you for putting your sickness on front street and being and showing that, you know, you there. A lot of people don't even make it to where you are now. Mm-hmm. So just admire your growth. Admire that you even there. Because I remember upon a time when you probably wouldn't even go to rehab. Like, fuck rehab. I'd rather go. You feel me? So just admire where you are now, your journey, bro. I salute you, bro. I see you, bro. And keep standing up.
And that's, I mean, one last thing, and we can poke it back, wrap it up. But, like, going to prison, dealing with it, I didn't know about rehab before prison. I didn't think you could have a problem with alcohol if you're not doing heroin and meth. That's where my mind was. I was like, I'm not doing those drugs. They got a problem. I'm doing all this. No problem here. I'm making money, blah, blah, blah. And then I came out of prison with so much damn shame. That was what the biggest force with me not even wanting to dive into this project at first.
Right.
Is that I had so much shame. I didn't want to put this shit out there like this. I come from a culture where you don't talk about this, you know, especially Middle Eastern American. Like, you don't talk. I mean, addiction runs deep in my family for generations. Mad opium, mad alcoholism. My dad used to say, and rest in peace, my Bubba Bazorg, my grandpa, he used to say he used to do his prayers every morning while getting drunk. Doing it, he's praying five times a day, getting drunk, doing it. And you don't talk about this shit ever. I've never said that out loud to any person ever. And I came out with so much shame that I wanted to pretend like nothing ever happened. So I get where Joe came from. Like, it never happened. Yeah, I got a job now. I'm doing this and that. You know, I'm hopping back into life. You see me? Like, this stuff never happened. And I'm realizing, like, the biggest power we have is to kind of acknowledge that and then try to find a solution. So I'm doing my best.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, the show is an archive of everyone doing a great job. And, you know, that was, it was an interesting component to with our comrade, because I was like, look, man, no shame. And like, some people do the stuff and get on by, and it just seems like we're working together and you've set these goals, and in support of you meeting those goals, I think the thing in the way is this thing. And so, like, that's not a problem, but we can work together on the solution. That's it. And so, you know, as Squeeze said, it's like, it's a sickness and it needs to be addressed in a certain way. And it's just interesting, again, like when I was saying, I am kind of inviting our man to like catch up with Mon's mouse friend, you know what I mean? But it is this path that might lead to what all the stuff we're talking about. And the last thing I wanted to do is call out, it's funny because I like see the things and I like, I guess if I was smarter and better at my job, I would have like a set list. But Baltimore mayor, I used to march with him with an activist group called the 300 Men March. And we used to go out every Friday night and like just patrol the streets of Baltimore, projecting positivity into the streets, putting up signs on abandoned row houses. And, you know, he, Brandon Scott, you know, rose up since then and is now Baltimore mayor. And I saw actually in Portland, there's a like a street team that's like mental health response to like emergency, you could call them. And then I saw that like a little bit ago, and I just saw like this morning, Brandon Scott, mayor of Baltimore, has like a whole swearing, a whole team of people specifically responding to trauma, because they're just like, yo, it's Baltimore. And this is, it is normal for every man, woman, child on the streets to actually be suffering trauma. And if anything's going on, like, we need someone who can address this. And this is the kind of stuff that we might have been seeing if Portland had, you know, a one of the write-in black female candidates for mayor. And instead, we have this situation, and it's almost funny because I've been popping into classrooms teaching about the mayor, and I had a kid be like, oh, Ted, because Ted was like, oh, it's really a shame to see people living on the streets. We gotta, it's a human travesty. And the kid was like, it really is. And he's like, I vote for Ted, because we did like a mock election. They didn't know the mayor's already been decided. And like, and then he's like, I was like, well, this is what happened. Ted's sweeping him up. And he's like, no. And he was like complaining about the police. And I was like, did you know Ted's also the police commissioner? And he's like, what? So we're trying to educate them. We're trying to educate the youth. We are trying to educate ourselves. We are trying to bring it together. We are studying the people who are doing the work. This is Tin Can Phone. Got anything left to share with this audience?
Hey, man, you already know, man, where we strip the blue, where we keep it real. You know what I'm saying? It's your boy, Misfit Adi, Tin Can Phone, gang in this month, Armand, Pretty Boy Pusto. What's happening?
You know, it's all peace and love. And I got a lot of things. I got a lot out of this episode. Artist, what are you thinking?
I mean, it's been good. It's been a tough month. Like I said, it's been some positive stuff, but it's also been real. And I think the real sign off, I mean, it's great to see you both doing well, but Mon, we've been like separated by the walls of all these different barriers, though we share a city footprint. And so for you to say that you got a lot out of this, that's all. I thank God for Saturday. You know what I mean? I'm glad. So thanks for being here, both you guys. You are listening to the Tin Can Phone Podcast, where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the source. We tell the story from the inside out. So make sure to check us out on KBOO Community Radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple, and anywhere you catch your podcasts. And make sure to give us a follow over at tincanphonepodcast.com. See you next time.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
High-speed rail has been safely, efficiently, and affordably transporting people around the world for nearly 60 years now. But until recently, it's never been able to move forward in America. High-speed rail systems are now underway in California and in Texas. And with a new progressive administration in Washington, D.C., is it time for bullet trains in America? My guest today, Brad Perkins, has been working to save the dream of high-speed rail on the tracks in the Pacific Northwest. I'm Trevor Collins, and this is Times Like Now. Hello, Brad Perkins. Thank you for joining me today.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
So you've been involved with high-speed rail out of Portland, Oregon, working on this from your side of things for almost 15